Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Residents of Syria's eastern Ghouta region are described as hunkering in basements and bomb shelters trying to survive in tense bombardment of their besieged rebel-held enclave. More than 300 have been killed in 4 days, with hundreds wounded. The International Committee of the Red Cross called for humanitarian access. Yolanda Jacomet is an ICRC spokeswoman.
We are calling for restraint, sparing civilians, and we are calling for immediate humanitarian access. You have currently people dying simply because they have no access to healthcare, injured people dying, and this is urgent for humanitarian organizations such as ourselves to be able to save their lives.
The UN Security Council is expected to debate a draft resolution calling for a 30-day ceasefire. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he's appalled by the carnage.
And so my appeal to all those involved is for an immediate suspension of all war activities in eastern Ghouta, allowing for humanitarian aid to reach all those in need.
Mr. Guterres said the 400,000 residents trapped in eastern Ghouta live in hell on earth. Dozens of schoolgirls abducted by the insurgent group Boko Haram from a school in Nigeria's northeast Yobe state have been rescued by the army. Several are still missing. Bucky Honabara's leader, the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, formed in the wake of a similar mass abduction in Chibok in Borno state 4 years ago.
This is a condemnable act, and this is an act that shows that indeed we may be winning the war, but there's still a lot that still needs to be done to ensure that every girl child, every child in the northeast, another part of Nigeria, are protected enough against incidences like this.
The 2014 abduction drew global attention on Boko Haram. This is VOA News. In Venezuela, the opposition coalition said it will boycott the April 22nd presidential vote, calling it fraudulent and illegitimate, citing unfair conditions. Those conditions are said to include the timing of the election and the ban on some opposition candidates from running. Jennifer McCoy, a Venezuela analyst at Georgia State University, said boycotts generally proved to be unsuccessful.
However, in this case, the conditions are definitely unfair and the time frame is short. But in addition, they have the backing of a large part of the international community, which has not been in the case in the past for the Venezuelan opposition when they have gone to boycotts previously.
Meanwhile, President Nicolas Maduro has called for snap elections for the opposition-controlled National Assembly 2 years ahead of schedule. In Peru, at least 44 were killed Wednesday when their double-decker bus veered off the Pan-American Highway and plunged 80 meters into a ravine in southern Peru. It was the second major bus accident in Peru this year. South Africa's new leaders have unveiled a budget that calls for a hike in the value-added tax to 15 from 14%, the first one since 1993 before the end of apartheid, in a bid to cut the deficit. Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba addressed Parliament Wednesday.
And it is low compared to some of our peers, such as Argentina, Morocco, Turkey, and Kenya. We therefore decided that increasing VAT was unavoidable if we are to maintain the integrity of our public finances.
The government hopes the change to go into effect in April will generate billions in additional revenue as it tries to stimulate growth and create jobs. In Somalia, a U.S. drone killed three al-Shabaab militants Monday. The strike occurred near the town of Jilib, about 370 kilometers southwest of Mogadishu. America's best-known Protestant evangelist Billy Graham has died. He was 99. A counselor to presidents, Graham preached to hundreds of millions in a career that spanned seven decades. Grant Wacker, professor emeritus at Duke Divinity School, has authored a book about Graham and talked about his cultural legacy.
They are twofold. One is his desire to make the gospel as inclusive as possible. Do not alienate people needlessly. Now, there are principles there. There are some things that can't be compromised. But as far as possible, reach out rather than draw lines. The second legacy is that he preached a message which, when you really think about it, was a message of a second chance.
Wacker said Graham would view his greatest legacy as the Christian conversion of 3 million people. At the Winter Olympics, American freestyle skier David Wise defended his gold medal Thursday, giving the U.S. its third gold in the halfpipe. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Weah appeals for France's help to develop Liberia.
Today, I return to France in my new capacity as President of the Republic of Liberia, seeking for the people of Liberia the same opportunities and the same chances for success that France afforded me.
That's Liberian President George Weah speaking Wednesday in Paris. Miguna Miguna responds to Kenyan officials' demand that he should reapply for his Kenyan citizenship. Malawi's High Court says a 12-year-old corruption case against President Bakili Muluzi must continue, and Transparency International paints a grim picture of corruption in Africa.
Most African governments are failing to address corruption in the region, although we do have leaders that have invested in systemic responses to build strong institutions and create behavior change.
Kate Muwaki is Transparency International's regional advisor for Southern Africa. Zambia responds to criticism over the recent visit to Zambia of DRC President Joseph Kabila. And Oxfam says it is investigating new allegations of sexual misconduct. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President George Mane Weah has appealed to France to help develop Liberia. President Weah Wednesday met French President Emmanuel Macron in Paris, his first official visit outside of Africa since he was inaugurated in January this year. Weah said his government's development priorities include construction of new paved roads, improving Liberia's education and health sectors, and dealing with youth unemployment.
Monsieur le President, and Mesdames, Messieurs, we are therefore making this personal appeal to you and to your government of France to support us in any way that you can in our effort to jumpstart our economy while we concentrate on a structural adjustment, an institutional and policy framework that will allow us to achieve sustainable and stable improvement in our economy in the medium to long term. In this regard, our priorities include infrastructure, especially our national road network, which consists of only 700 kilometers of paved road. We are seeking funding to provide an additional 1,500 kilometers of new paved all-weather roads built to the highest international standard. We are also focused on the social sector of education and health, which are in need of urgent renewal. Additionally, the problem of youth unemployment and empowerment remains a major concern.
President Weah, Liberia's renowned international soccer star, began his football career in Monaco, France. He touted his football successes and said he returned to France to seek the same opportunities for Liberia that France gave him as a soccer player.
29 years ago, I entered this great country from Africa in search of opportunity on my way to Monaco. All I had in my bag were three pairs of trousers, three shirts, and a pair of football boots. During those days, my country, Liberia, was engulfed in an all-out civil war. My nights were sleepless, and my days were unbearably long. But my quest to succeed kept me moving. Monaco was the birthplace of my football career. The story of my success and accomplishment is well known to most of you. Three times African Player of the Year, FIFA World Player of the Year, Ballon d'Or, Football Hall of Fame, Salon de la Fama, CAF Player of the Decade, and the list goes on. There will have never been a track record like this without learning the values that I learned from Coach Winger. Learn to listen, be humble, and work hard. And I can say today, Your Excellency, with great humility and at the same time with great pride, that without France, perhaps this accomplishment may not have been achieved. I am a product of France. Today, I return to France in my new capacity as President of the Republic of Liberia, seeking for the people of Liberia the same opportunities and the same chances for success that France afforded me.
That's Liberian President George Manning Weah speaking Wednesday in Paris, France. For his part, French President Emmanuel Macron thanked President Weah for choosing France to make his first official foreign visit outside the African continent. The French president noted the Liberian youth expectation in Weah and said France will be alongside Mr. Weah endeavors to meet the needs of his people. President Macron said since the election of President Weah, France has started to put Liberia on its development assistance priority list. For more than a decade, African nations have put a generally dismal performance on Transparency International's annual Corruption Perceptions Index, and they continue to do so in 2017, according to the latest index released on Wednesday. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Sub-Saharan Africa continues to do poorly in Transparency International's annual corruption index, with Somalia maintaining its 12-year streak at the bottom of its chart of 180 countries. The index found more than two-thirds of the countries surveyed scored below 50 points on the 100-point scale, with an average score of 43. African nations averaged a score of 32. Somalia scored just 9. Transparency International's regional advisor for Southern Africa, Kate Mwaki, described Africa's past year.
Most African governments are failing to address corruption in the region, although we do have leaders that have invested in systemic responses to build strong institutions and create behavior change. So in terms of some of these rays of hope, at the top of the table, we have Botswana, Seychelles, Cabo Verde, Rwanda, and Namibia, who all score currently over 50. And then in terms of the very bottom of the table, there hasn't been much change. We still have the likes of South Sudan, Somalia right at the bottom, and significant declines from countries like Malawi, Madagascar, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau.
But, she says, the African Union and several key leaders, notably the presidents of the two largest economies on the continent, Nigeria and South Africa, have recently made clean governance a pet issue. 2017 also saw the fall of several leaders long accused of shady dealings. Gambia's Yahya Jammeh, Angola's José Eduardo dos Santos, Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe, and most recently South Africa's Jacob Zuma. A high-level corruption scandal also tainted the administration of Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn, who resigned earlier this month amid mounting anti-government protests. Zuma's successor, Cyril Ramaphosa, has made fighting corruption his signature issue. The billionaire businessman this week called for top government officials to be audited, starting with himself.
Now, if there ever has been anything that many South Africans would like to have line of sight of, is the lifestyle audit of their public representatives. Now, that is something that I believe we have to do. And this will be done starting with the executive of the country. Yes, we will go in that way.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari recently announced all national assets recovered in a recent anti-corruption drive would be sold to benefit the treasury. Buhari is also the first AU anti-corruption czar. Mwaki says that the global watchdog has noted these developments.
2018 marks a very important year for the continent. We have seen this renewed commitment from the African Union and from leaders at the recent summit in Addis Ababa. It is encouraging, and we definitely support this. These are some of the things that we would be encouraging civil society and media and some of these other key stakeholders to hold these leaders to account.
She says that may be the best way to clear the dark clouds of corruption with the brightest of sunshine. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 22nd, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The High Court of Malawi has ruled that a 12-year-old corruption case involving former President Bakeli Muluzi should continue. The ruling rejects a defense motion that aimed to invalidate Section 32 of the Corrupt Practices Act. It requires the accused to provide evidence without a lawyer that he is innocent. The defense argue that such law infringes on the presumption of innocence and the constitutional right of their client to remain silent. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The 74-year-old former President Muluzi is answering charges that he and his former press secretary, Wayne Siriski, stole 1.7 billion Malawi kwacha during his 1994 to 2004 presidency. The funds came to Malawi as aid from Taiwan, Morocco, and Libya. The former president has always said the charges were politically motivated. The court asked Muluzi to personally prove his innocence as required by the Corrupt Practices Law. The defense lawyers argued in their motion that the legislation contradicts constitutional provisions which give an accused person the right to remain silent. However, a panel of three judges led by Justice Dingiswayo Madise told the court that no one enjoys the right to silence in a corruption case.
If the fight against corruption is to be effectively achieved, courts must bring to life the intentions of Parliament when it passed the provision in issue. In our considered view, find that this application and the orders and declarations were ill-conceived and without merit. In that regard, this application must fail in its entirety with cost to the respondent.
Madise ordered the presiding judge to prepare to resume the case.
We direct that the trial judge shall set down the criminal matter involving the applicant for hearing directions within 30 days from today in order to facilitate the speedy prosecution of the criminal matter. We so order.
But defense lawyers say they are going to appeal the ruling. Tamando Chokoto is the one of the lawyers representing Muluzi.
We sincerely believe that Section 32, subsection 2, paragraph B and C of the Corrupt Practices Act are unconstitutional. They do place a legal and evidential burden on the accused to prove his innocence. This is the High Court's decision, but we do have recourse to the Supreme Court and we shall be proceeding.
A state lawyer and the prosecuting attorney, Happy Gayuni, said he is happy with the ruling. The trial, which started in 2009, has been subject to several adjournments, partly because of Muluzi's hospitalization related to spinal problems. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The deported lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says Kenyan authorities must comply with a court order to return his seized passport to the court. Miguna Miguna, who administered the swearing-in of Raila Odinga as the so-called People's President, was deported to Canada earlier this month because the Kenyan government said he holds a Kenyan citizenship. On Wednesday, Kenyan Immigration Chief retired Major General Gordon Kihalangwa told Parliament that Miguna Miguna will have to reapply for his Kenyan citizenship because when Miguna left Kenya in 1986, he forfeited all other processes that made him a Kenyan. But Miguna describes the claim as nonsense.
The court ordered the Director for Immigration to deliver my valid passport in the same condition that they collected it forcefully from me and deliver it to the court. What they have delivered is a shredded document. It is not a passport, and it is not valid. So they have not complied with the court order. The court did not order them that I reapply for a passport. The court told them that they deliver back my passport to the court. My passport is valid until next year. There is no reason why I should apply for a new passport. I don't want to apply for a new passport, because I have a valid passport. To apply for a passport means your passport has expired or just about to expire. My passport has not expired. It's not about to expire. And they are not the ones to tell me when to apply to renew my passport.
I think the immigration chief is trying to say that he had no ill will towards you when you were deported. He said when you left Kenya to Canada in 1986, you lost your Kenyan citizenship. So did you feel that you were still a Kenyan national, a citizen?
I'm trying to say what he's saying is nonsense. First of all, I did not leave Kenya in 1986. In 1986, I was a university student at the University of Nairobi. So that's just false. And you do not lose citizenship because you've left a country. There are thousands of Kenyans, in fact, millions, who are living abroad, who are studying abroad. They don't cease to be Kenyans. So they don't lose their citizenship because they have left the country. So, as I said, it's nonsense. And it just demonstrates the complete impunity with which people working for these two despots, Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto, do not care about court orders. They do not care about the judiciary. They do not care about the rule of law.
He seems to be defending the government's decision to withdraw or withhold passport to certain citizens of Kenya, saying passport is the government's property and the government can withdraw any time the government wants.
That's not true. You see, these people who are working for Uhuru and Ruto have not even read the Constitution, which should be the qualification for holding a senior government position. The Constitution of Kenya 2010 says a citizen of the Republic of Kenya has a right to a passport. It's not a privilege. The right is not vested by the government. The right is vested by the Constitution. And it also says a citizen of Kenya has a right to enter Kenya, to stay in Kenya, to travel in Kenya, to leave Kenya anytime they want, and to be able to come back anytime they want.
So, Dr. Miguna, do you still want to return to Kenya?
Is that not a stupid question? Did I come here willingly? I was brought here forcefully, isn't it? So how does that even become a question?
So why don't you take up the offer that is being made?
There is no offer. It is a violation of a court order. The problem you have, Mr. Bhatti, is that you seem intent and very strongly intent. Your intention is to defend the illegitimate government. This government was ordered to do something, and they have disobeyed the order. The court said the revocation of the passport is a nullity, which means it did not happen, that the so-called revocation of citizenship is also a nullity.
Miguna Miguna is the deported lawyer for Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga. You're speaking with me from Toronto, Canada. A Zambian official has been responding to criticism over the recent visit to Zambia of President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of Congo. There were reports that Zambian President Edgar Lungu had warned the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo that friendship between Zambia and the DRC depends on President Kabila being able to run for a new term, even though Mr. Kabila's term ended in 2016. The Zambian president reportedly said Kabila was a very good president who was loved by more than 60% of the Congolese people. But presidential spokesman Amos Chanda said President Lungu invited President Kabila to talk about how Zambia can support the DRC as that country prepares for its December 2018 presidential elections.
The first thing to state is that President Lungu is a deputy chair, an incoming chair of the SADC, Politics, Defense and Security. In short, he presides over the organ of the 14-member regional bloc of countries that supervises political defense and security processes to ensure that the SADC region is stable. So the chair of that organ receives and intervenes in situations anywhere in the region where there is a potential for instability, or there is instability in terms of conflict. It could be a political process. In this case, there is a civil conflict going on in the DRC, and then the contested election timetable that has been on and off. So President Kabila requested that in order to discuss a broad range of bilateral issues, President Kabila took time to brief the president, President Lungu, on the political processes, the electoral process going on in the DRC, leading to the scheduled December 23 elections. And the president encouraged President Kabila to stick by that timetable and pledged full support that Zambia will stand by and help the DRC go through a credible electoral process.
So, Amos, I think it was in the Lusaka Times that I read some comments attributed to President Lungu suggesting that the President Lungu saying that he thought that good relations between Zambia and the DRC would depend on whether President Kabila is allowed to run again for another term. I read also where some opposition members in Zambia are criticizing President Lungu for inviting President Kabila to come. So are you saying that the articles in the Lusaka Times are not correct?
That's pure fake news if those articles were read, and it damages the credibility of the Lusaka Times if indeed they carried such a thought. Because I was in the meeting, I briefly phrased myself about the outcome of what the two presidents said. And the other one was actually in open session, so it's quite unfortunate. And if an opposition leader showed that level of ignorance, again, it exposes the danger that an alternative, a so-called alternative government, if such would be the reasoning of the so-called alternative or shadow government, then that's extremely unfortunate. To say that a president who has been given regional responsibility to oversee peace and security in the region must say no when a president who is presenting a situation of peace and security in their country has come. Actually, it explains why those opposition parties in Zambia are not in government.
So, Amos, tell me, who is printing and selling rolls of toilet paper with the picture of President Lungu on it?
It's the opposition, UPND. It is all over their site. They've run out of ideas or how to engage the government in a civil manner, and therefore they are resorting to extreme low-caliber politics. Unfortunately, it's not helping them at all because Zambians are reacting badly to that cheap propaganda.
I read somewhere where someone has commented that this could be some people in the party, and they say that the party has printed other materials with President Lungu on it.
No, that can only be the opposition. How does it benefit us to descend to such levels? How would that such a campaign benefit a decent party like the one that President Lungu leads?
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. British aid agency Oxfam says it is investigating dozens of new allegations of sexual misconduct. It follows revelations last week that some Oxfam staff in Haiti paid sex workers in the aftermath of the 2010 earthquake. As Henry Richwell reports from London, the scandal looks set to mark a watershed moment for the aid sector.
Oxfam is one of the world's best-known aid agencies, working to alleviate poverty and providing emergency relief. But the allegations of sexual misconduct threaten to engulf the organisation. Oxfam directors Tuesday apologised for the damage caused and said 26 other cases are now being investigated.
So this is about aligning our people with the values of Oxfam. Some hideous men came into our organization and abused the trust of the British people, the supporters, but they were able to get away, to get a recommendation to leave. This was wrong.
Thank you.
But so we're going to change the culture.
Oxfam's Haiti director at the time of the allegations was allowed to resign before the end of the investigation. He denies any wrongdoing. Several other charities are now investigating their own handling of abuse allegations. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that's it for this Thursday, February 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopia is set to undergo a major political change following the unexpected resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. The nation is now under a six-month state of emergency, as declared by the defense minister, but the U.S. State Department says it strongly disagrees with a call to declare a state of emergency. A discussion on Ethiopia.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.